right. So as soon as we get this... Patricia, do you mind if I ask you a favor? Would you mind shutting that door for me? It's kind of like being the AV person in high school, you know? But we have our very own AV person in the form of Kurt Heinz tonight. He is... Hello. He's actually recording the feature tonight for posterity. So although it usually takes about a month to get all of the documentation, all the work up online, you know, if you can't live without hearing this a second time, just wait a month and check out epoets.net and you'll get a chance to hear it again. So tonight's feature is Paul Martinez Pampa, who I first heard about through my friend Brenda Cardenas, who had been, I think she was the judge for a contest at Triton, and she came back from that and said, I heard this really amazing young poet. He's just doing the most interesting stuff, and he's so damn young, and he's just really, really good. And so it took me a while, and which always highlights the age of the person saying it more than it highlights the person who's being spoken of. Right, whatever. So in any case, on the strength of that recommendation, I've managed to hear a couple of his pieces and see some of them online. But, you know, in the way I get to do with this reading, you know, if I want to hear a poet, I just bring him here as a feature. So, Paul has earned degrees from the University of Chicago, and hopefully he's got normal from that experience subsequently, and Indiana University, where he served as a poetry editor at Indiana Review. His chapbook, Pepper Spray, was published by Momotombo Press in 2006, and he's got a full-length book, his first coming out. It was selected for, is it Mano Toyo? Toya poetry? Okay, it's got more O's than I would have thought it would have had, but it's got that many. The book's going to be is called My Kill Adore Him, and it's due out on the University of Notre Dame Press later this year. And so if you want to get that book, you're just going to have to follow him around, and I think there may be some pepper spray floating around, but you're going to have to contact him or ask him, and he'll get them to you. So, without further ado, let's give a warm welcome for Paul Martinez Pampa.
Thank you, Nina and Al, for inviting me. My first poem that I ever got published ever was in Al's journal. So, yeah. So it's sentimental. You always remember your first poem, and I'll always be grateful for that. Maybe because the season's right, I feel like reading this poem. It's called Elegy for Winter. Yes, you can. You can throw it out. All night, the plows pummeled the streets with salt, and sidewalks disappeared under snow. Folding chairs and milk crates mark the exhumation sites of unburied cars. Each block is a struggle, bungalows eclipsed by huddled three flats. Trendy lofts rise from hyperbolic potholes, large enough to swallow the entire city. We will forget all this by spring, when the snow has returned to the sky and the streets are bound with nothing but tar. Now the gray ice hangs like murder from the trees. This looming we nearly mistake for beauty. I wrote this for another reading series in Chicago, the Rec Room reading series. Some of you might be familiar with it. And there's always a different theme that's associated with each time that that series is given. And when I read in this particular time, the theme was cute. You had to write a poem that dealt with cute, the topic of cuteness. So this is my take on cute. And it's called Amputee, Etc. Nothing cuter than a war amputee. His limb not as fleshy ruin, but as fresh bouquet of soft tissue blasted with love through desert air. Nothing prettier than a deserted semi-trailer loaded with dead Mexicans. How their mouths fall open like little brown orchids, thirsty for a breath of hot air. Nothing lovelier than a Chi-town cop who pummels a bartender one-third his size. See his fists not as mallets, but as opportunity knocking her body again, again. Nothing sweeter than a white politician who plays the erase card when a black man speaks. Like the weather, cultural imperialism gives us something to look forward to. Nothing truer than a poet who resists on paper. Admire his nerve to condemn from a safe distance where he can keep his shoes and his conscience perfectly clean. This is, I guess, a childhood narrative poem. Pulling Tongue. Lisette opens me with her fingers, and I struggle to breathe with her tongue in my mouth. Suddenly, we are stars in a Mexican romance film that unravels on her aunt's stoop, backlit by flickering street lamp. An audience of boys forms, and I feel the pressure to comply. Cat calls and uneasy laughter. I kiss harder. Her finger stutters over her knee. Excuse me. My finger stutters over her knee, her thigh. You fucking Mexicans kiss like girls, she says. Slaps my arm. The crash of the metal storm door behind her. The boys swell into a mob set to detonate the entire block. I rise and brace myself for their eyes, their bodies that wet the night. Your hands are going to get tired because my poems are very short. So. This is a few years ago. Tim Hardaway, who's a former NBA basketball player, went on this homophobic diatribe against, he was in an interview and they asked him what he felt about gay basketball players being in the NBA. And he said his thing. So this is for him. And there's a few references. Zoe is a player that Tim Hardaway played. Tim Hardaway was a point guard. And Zoe is Alonzo Mourning, who was a center. You know, centers tend to be tall. Manute Bol is another center, a really tall center who he played with. And the Shaq reference, you probably know, is Shaquille O'Neal. Shower stall baller for Tim Hardaway. Maybe Zoe was hung like a 6'10 stallion, but did Manute Bol's 7 feet, 7 inches of sweat-glistened man swagger penetrate the Golden State locker room like a jungle-fevered white woman's long, exotic fantasy? What should a man do crammed inside a shower stall of muscle and lather, minutes after a brutal game of half-court picks, determined elbows, bruised flesh below a rim that swallows, then shits a leather rock to the hard wood, to the hyperbolically large hands of gods whose aggression is marketed to inspire us? Check the stats. 12-man roster, 14 years in the league, 82 games each means 12,628 exposures to NBA Dick. So it's better you fled Miami before Shaq came with enough girth and length to make something recoil deep inside your jock like an upside-down question mark. Not a very good transition into this poem, but it's next, so whatever. This is sort of like an elegy. Officer Friendly. Me and Z walking the block when a cop shoots his spotlight in our eyes, when two more police roll up with guns and fear and get on the fucking ground, I do. But Z moves too slow and the sidewalk don't budge when they drive his face into it. A cop fumbles his cuffs, lowers his gun, says, "Wait, that's not the guy. Sorry, amigo," and they flee. A lesson in masculinity. She taught me to wipe the urine dribble off the tip until Poppy said, "No, men don't wipe, they shake." Do y'all know what an abuelita is? A grandmother. You're not complete as a Latino poet if you haven't written a grandmother poem, so this is my take, and it's in two parts. The abuelita poem, one, skin and corn. Her brown skin glistens as the sun pours through the kitchen window like gold leche. After grinding the nixtamal, a word so beautifully ethnic, it must not only be italicized, but underlined to let you, the reader, know you've encountered something beautifully ethnic. She kneads with the hands of centuries-old ancestor spirits who magically, yet realistically, possess her until the masa is smooth as a lowrider's chrome bumper. And I know she must do this with care because it says so on a website that explains how to make homemade corn tortillas. So much labor for this peasant bread, this edible art birthed from abuelita's brown skin, which is still glistening in the sun. Two, apology. Before she died, I called my abuelita grandma. I cannot remember if she made corn tortillas from scratch, but oh, how she'd flip the factory fresh El Milagros, quality since 1950, on the burner, bathe them in butter and salt for her grandchildren, how she'd knead the buttons on the phone, order me food from Pizza Hut. I assure you, gentle reader, this was done with the spirit of Mesoamerica. A blaze in her fingertips. This is, I guess, a poem about assimilation, and it's in 10 very short parts, and each part is numbered. And what I did is I took the Spanish number, like uno, dos, tres, and made a homophonic translation of that number. So uno, based on how it sounds in English, became ono, like, oh no, I dropped my beer, okay? So, yeah. It's about language and assimilation. It's called Retablos, 10 Deleted Tongues. Oh no. Watch out for the Mexican, American Border Patrol officer. He's fluent in badge, gun, and pepper spray. Doze. Hispanics panic when I step to the mic to spit Chicano shit. Trace. If I stand on this side of the big river and you stand on that side, I can't see you unless you talk real loud. Cutthroat. The writer intended to convey blank here, but due to the limitations of the writer's language, Seagold. That language does not make sense. When that language makes sense, I will invest in it emotionally. Says, my son goes to college. I'm very proud of him. Now he's a comunista, and I don't understand a pinche word he says. See it think. My father, 9 years old, at the blackboard, writing, I will not speak Spanish in class. I will not speak Spanish in class. I will not speak. Alchuo. My pocho, tongue loss, a second language. Me with a Spanish last name who can't talk Spanish. Nuevi. Whisper something sexy and dirty in my ear, something Mexican. Deist. Since Jesus never learned English, he was promptly denied a second coming into Arizona. Sucker MC. Your palm windmilling double clutch tween the legs can't sink a fucking free throw. Trying to think if this when I had the privilege of having my chapbook published, when I received my first batch in the mail, they were wrapped in newspaper, and they looked like bricks of cocaine or heroin. At least that's what I've never had anyone mail me bricks of cocaine or heroin, but I imagine that's what they would look like if they did. This is called The War on Poets Goes On, O'Hare International Airport. I didn't get past security without them sweating my trendy carry-on loaded with a 2-pound brick of chapbooks wrapped like contraband or a cheap Christmas gift. Unwrap it, he said, and I tore it open like a man-child, desperate for nothing but attention, half fearing, half wanting a Gestapo bum rush to drag me off, lock me in a dark room. That's right, man, you got me on possession with intent to distribute. I'm flying to New York with reified revolution in my bag. Haul me in, deem me enemy combatant. One of my poems alone could wipe out an entire city block. But he didn't even flinch when he saw my books. All I got was, we can't let anything dangerous on. These are fine. Go on through. Enjoy your trip. These next few poems I received help in sharpening them and shaping them and editing them from Barbara Perry, who's in my writing group. So thank you, Barbara. These are for you. This piece I want to dedicate to my jeans. It's called Identity Politic. Why jeans as in J-E-A-N-S, by the way, that I'm wearing, not G-E-A. Yeah, I did pay from this way. That's what my mother asked me. Identity Politic. Why make my own identity when I can buy dungarees mass-produced like desire is a predetermined trend I never buck. A system that says my denim is in distress. The working class mass surrenders its fashion capital to a laborer who works the look without the effort. The sweat, the dinero go into holes, the fray, the wash, what make me an individual. Similar style. This is called political plasma. So convenient to forget my political shtick with a 63-inch plasma hung over my head, an empty space on the wall plugged with what you wish you had. Subwoofers, beefcake is mine, a gargantuan shindig of channels, a distraction in surround sound speaks. So I don't have to waive my right to rent appliance art. I boost my lackluster libido with a dream machine that is always turned on. You guys okay? All right, I'm just gonna do three more. Along the same spirit, this is called Erectile Miss. How dare you diss my erectile dysfunction? It's much too hard to maintain this cheap wordplay when Donald trumped up the entire cityscape. The problem is my head, you prick. These loins aren't on fire. My boner's shipped from Canada in child-resistant vials. But have you seen what happens to chorizo once it's cooked? This is a found form poem that riffs off of the Communist Manifesto. By Karl Marx, and it's called Manifesto. A specter is haunting the suburbs, the specter of illegal aliens. All the powers of suburbia have entered into a holy alliance to rid this specter. Now it is time that illegals, openly in the face of the gringos, publish their views, their aims, their tendencies, and meet this nursery tale of the specter of illegal aliens with a manifesto of the party itself. One. Yes, it is true. Cuando hablamos español, we are talking about you. How to lower your property values, how to raise your car insurance premiums, how to steal your children, drag them across the border, and sniff them. The blonder, the better. We're tired of arroz con pollo. We want arroz con Anglo. Two. Do you really think it's fertilizer we spread over your lawns? No, it's ozone killer. That's right. The hole in the ozone layer can be traced directly back to us. Traffic jams, drug addiction, gingivitis, all are doing. We've conspired with the federal government to divert your taxes into our coffers. FICA now stands for Frijole Ingestion Cash Advance. Three, we don't want your wives. We want Califas, Arizona, and just for the hell of it, Iowa. Soon you will wake to the ruckus of reggaeton, the boom of banda, the clatter of millions of little brown feet invading your schools, wherein anyone caught learning English will be charged with treason and deported. Illegals of all countries, unite. And before I read this last one, I just want to thank you very much for listening and for sharing your work. And I actually edit a very small time journal at Triton. There, I have a few free copies, and the new copy just came out. So if you're interested in submitting me work, we start taking work late summer, basically, or talk to me afterwards if you're interested. I'd be happy. It's called Ariel, and there's a few copies over there. So, and by the way, quick shout out to my students who came out from Triton. They're all wonderful. I'm very proud of them because they're amazing. And this last poem is more somber, I guess. It's called The Debris It Carries. Outside the window, the rain taps the sidewalk, and I realize I could sit and watch this forever. The weeds are reassuring how thousands will rise from something fallen. I can't write about you directly, so I write the water flowing, curbside, the debris it carries to vanish below ground. Our last conversation, a poem I cannot revise, a spill that left the bed littered with words unsaid. I envy this bird that searches the grass, knowing only what is necessary to survive. Envy more that place where the rain begins its descent, as if distance could make the heart grow dumber. Thank you very much.
That was one killer feature, I'd say. Give him another hand. I think he deserves it. Paul Martinez-Ponca, packing the house tonight.